Hi, welcome to Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. This is Brandon. I'm here with Kevin. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's nice to talk to you. It's nice to talk to the fair listener.
Indeed.
Listeners, I want you to know today, this is exciting today, listener. I'm going to explain to you about stock jorts. And then Kevin is going to explain to you the significance of stock skorts. So look forward to that.
This joke is going to make a lot of sense in like 10 years if someone listens to this.
Yeah, it will. I think America is going to be over in 10 years, so it won't matter.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, I do believe the new American National Anthem should be This is the End by the Doors.
Oh, God.
That's a deep cut. We haven't had a Doors reference in a couple episodes. So
that's what outgoing Banana Republican Donald Trump should have played at his little whatever going away party.
I like calling him Banana Republican. They're kind of all Banana Republicans at this point, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm trying not to get too political.
That's a good point. Did he play YMCA again? So you could do that hot YMCA dance? I'm assuming he did.
I don't know. But yeah, I kept playing the same songs that make no sense for him to be playing. But anyway, we're not going to get political because... Right.
Oh, for me, talking about his YMCA dance is not political. That's just... That's men in their 70s and dancing. Because that is the most 70s man dance ever.
It is, really.
It really is.
You're right.
Feet stay still, arms shifting, kind of, and then you realize, oh, my feet are too still right now. And so you just sort of like shift them both over at the same time.
Sort yeah, it was kind of like a geriatric St. Vitus dance or something. It was...
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so enough about him, because if I never have to talk about him again, I'll be fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good. This is our first time recording in the new administration.
Right, where nearly 500,000 people have already died. Thanks to Joe Biden.
Yeah, oh yeah. Just died of Democratic Partyism. That's all. Yeah.
How are you enjoying your socialism there?
Well, you know, honestly, I got to tell you, truthfully, my socialism is not working so well at this point because state of California has decided that they're confused about whether or not they should be giving me the benefits they were giving me. And so now I'm getting none. I got all my socialist benefits during the Trump administration.
This really is the most oligarchic. None
in the Biden administration.
This is the most oligarchical socialism I've ever run across.
Yeah.
But
yeah. You know, I may be at a breadline soon, so then that'll feel like...
Many people have been in breadlines.
I know.
Over the last year.
Uh-huh. It's true. If only I was spending more time on Reddit, that would have helped.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're not actually going to explain stock shorts, jorts, or skorts tonight, are we?
No.
No. Instead, well, I guess unless you got anything else you want to check in with, any other big stuff that's happening, we could dive into a question we were thinking about because it is related to sort of what's happening right now.
I did want to mention I started a new job today.
You did? Cool.
I did.
Tell me about it.
You sound like your voice was getting auto-tuned there for a second. You did?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna actually tune that up even more in post.
It's a large company whose product has not really changed in their 75 years of existence.
Large company, 75 years.
Later. I mean, I'm not gonna say who the company is, but what I thought was interesting was the office is in a building where part of it used to be a Baskin Robbins, or I'm sorry, a Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a Baskin Robbins. It was a Baskin Robbins. So as they're showing me around, I walk into the lunchroom, and up on the wall is this big neon frozen yogurt sign. And I was like, oh my God, my dream has come true. I work at a place that's going to give me frozen yogurt. But no, that was just a sign that was left over in the building when they took it over. So there is not frozen yogurt.
Sorry.
Although there is a freezer full of Fluffer Ice, flavor ice popsicles.
Oh, nice.
And some little bags of like trail mix of coffee and hot chocolate.
Cool.
So they actually do have. That's better than any job I've ever had before. So it's kind of like, it's kind of like a really, really low grade startup. And, you know, startups, you know,
they do.
Tech startups have like, you know, the full kitchens, you know, and
I was going to say, they would actually have Froyo.
Cooks for you, right?
Yeah.
Here we get a little, you know, some, and the sodas are all a quarter in the soda machine.
That's a nice price.
Yeah, but they're all diet sodas.
They're all diets. Are they name brand diet sodas or
yes.
Okay.
Yes. So there are like seven name brand diet sodas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can I guess which ones?
You can try, sure.
Okay, I'm gonna guess let's start with the big hitters. Was there Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi?
It's Diet Coke, yes.
Okay. Oh, so are they all Coke products?
I have no idea if they're all Coke products or not.
So you saw Diet Coke, you did not see Diet Pepsi?
No.
Okay. Did they have Coke Zero?
Yes. I bought a Coke Zero today because I've not tried a Coke Zero.
Yeah.
Doesn't taste like Coke.
Like I said, I mean, it wasn't high on my list.
You know what Diet Coke Zero tastes like to me?
What?
Diet Coke.
Yeah, I think it's close. It's a little different.
So they've got others. There's others.
Do they have we talked about Canada Dry Zero Sugar Ginger Ale. Do they have that?
Yes. They actually have that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That is. I'm going to stop right there. Yeah. Then you've got a great workplace. Cool.
Some Diet DP.
Did they have that? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
I don't remember.
Do they happen
to
have the, like the... They have like a vanilla cherry Diet DP. Do they have that?
Oh dear God, I have to check that.
Because that's
I'm going in tomorrow to do some more training.
All right.
Wouldn't necessarily normally go in on Saturday, but I'll do more training tomorrow. So maybe I'll take notes on that.
Yeah, definitely.
And also that big question, and this should probably be one of those things when people get a new job. I've not gotten a lot of new jobs. When you get a new job, or maybe like when you're checking out new churches or a country club or wherever, you know, someplace you might spend a lot of time, is to understand the quality of the toilet paper that they have in their public restrooms.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that this was a solid 6.5. There's so many double meanings now that I say it. But this was a 6.5, not quite a 7. Because I'm going to say like 10 is like the finest of toilet papers, you know, like made from like, you know, Angora wool or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And one is like your
That's
hand.
What we all use out here in California, by the way, is Angora wool toilet paper.
Sure. But like, you know, some of your better quality home toilet papers are probably like 8s, right? Or mm-hmm. I mean, it was soft, generally speaking, kind of soft.
Sure.
It was multiply.
Oh, that's a bit, see, that's huge right there.
It is.
That's a dividing line.
single ply toilet paper is pointless. No. Because you just use two or three times as much anyway. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
So,
well, either that, or you use a lot more water when you wash your hands.
But it was the texture was a little smoother, okay, than perhaps I like, but it didn't seem to do a good job. So it was, you know, it's a 6.5, and I thought, you know, I could take some poops here. This will be all right.
That's good.
I'm not going to have to hold it till I go get home.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, I've advocated for better toilet paper in workplaces before.
Mm.
You know, because we're not savages here.
No.
No.
No, that's not the goal.
No. No, no, no. Well, that's cool. Congratulations on the new job. And congratulations on the wide range of diet sodas.
Mm-hmm. And
and nice toilet paper.
Bargain popsicles and...
Yeah. That is pretty cool.
Yeah, you can just reach and get a popsicle. And the freezer, there was like a 20-pound box of Vienna hot dogs. And so I don't know if that's... I thought, it's my first day. I'm not going to pull out the box and see what's actually in there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was from some, you know, team-building activity or something that they did, sure, and they have leftover and we're going to do it again. So I may have quality hot dogs in my future.
That's
as well.
Nice. That's good.
And there was a giant slab of bacon in the refrigerator, and I don't know about that either. I don't know if some of these people that I work with are like actually cooking at work. There is a stove.
This is getting more and more interesting, especially when you say it's a company that's been around for 75 years. You said it's a big company, right?
It is.
This, I would not expect like a company refrigerator with bacon in it. That's wow.
So that's why I thought somebody. It's like, oh, geez, I got this bacon with me. I don't want to leave it in the car. Yeah. Bring it in? That seems weird.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the bacon story. But,
well, we'll have to check back in the future about that.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, cool. That's good news. I'm glad to hear it. So the other thing I wanted to talk, and I have to admit, I have no news. I have nothing interesting at all. So... I'm glad.
Whatever happened with your leak?
Yeah. It's okay. It's okay. It appears that we have. It appears that we do have some area around the tub where the caulking has maybe gotten weak in some way. A little water got through.
A weak caulk.
Yeah.
Lost its pliability.
Maybe
it's become brittle and pulled away and then left again.
But it hasn't pulled away, so I can't tell where the problem lies. But somewhere, something, that impenetrable barrier is now penetrable.
It's been penetrated.
It's been breached. And everything dried off. Things look fine. Yeah. Although, sad part, the back wall of our house, there are, it's a nice house where we live. It's about 30 years old. It's still like the original windows, and it's original pretty much everything. The back side of the house takes the brunt of heavy storms. And a couple of years ago, one day we're having a heavy storm, and all of a sudden we realized that it was like there was a waterfall effect on the inside of those windows, on the back side of the house.
On the inside?
On the inside. It was dramatic. So many towels later, sopped that all up. But then when it would get heavy rain, it would come back. So we had contacted the landlord about this. And it was finally, one winter, nothing happened because there were no really heavy rains. And then during this last year, sent a guy out. He checked it out. He looked at it. He goes, oh, yeah, I think that all the caulking on the outside of the windows here is all really dried out. So he removed all of that, and then he re-caulked the whole thing. And he's like, yeah, I think it's going to be good. Let's take care of it.
Didn't, did it?
No, not at all. No, it We've had heavy storms. We have, there has, you may have heard about this. There's been an atmosphere. I'll cut that out.
Atmospheric anomalies.
That's what I was going for.
Atmospheric anomalies are.
It's the atmospheric river that comes flowing out of the west and all poured up against the side of our house. And
all of it.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Terrible. Really rough. And a good bit came through. So we got to talk to the old landlord and tell him didn't solve the problem.
Buddy.
But the good news is we're California. We're in a drought. So
other than the water.
Drought being a problem, yes. Right. If no more atmospheric rivers show up, we should be fine. But yeah, other than that, all good.
Excellent.
Yeah. So it is the dead of winter, and this is that time of year, you know, football is just about over, which is a blessing, but baseball mm-hmm. hasn't started yet, and that's hard. That's my least favorite time of the year. Because then it's, there's nothing, no exciting sporting going on. It's super cold. Like, for example, here today, it got down to like 43. So,
I'm not biting on that. You've lived there long enough that joke now is just.
I know. It's just annoying now. I know.
Yeah.
Although, and I'm going to say this, because when I was, I used to make fun, right? But I will say that when you, like, if you live someplace, whatever that bottom temp is, mm-hmm. when you endure, like, just endure that for a long period of time, that feels cold. Mm-hmm. Now, if I was actually putting, maybe part of it's got, still don't put on a winter coat. If I actually put on a winter coat, maybe I wouldn't feel cold. But I go outside in a light coat and 45 feels cold to me. So.
Yeah, I mean, 45 feels cold the first time you feel it, even as a Midwesterner.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it all makes sense.
So. So it's that lousy time of the winter, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so normally I'd be like really excited because I'd be counting the days for spring training. And of course, spring training is hoping to get started. Baseball is hoping that it's going to happen. But we still are in this pandemic. I believe that was another thing. Didn't we hear that was, again, not to get political, but that after Joe Biden became president, they were just going to, oh, no, the pandemic's fine. It's not a problem anymore. No, it's still a problem.
But there are people saying that, see, now that Joe Biden is president, states are opening up and saying everything is fine, which is not exactly what states are doing.
Right.
But I think what's happening is people are just continuing to give up more and more.
Yeah, I think so. And, well, and understandably, people are fatigued on the restrictions, which is why it was a bad idea to not, like, go all in from the start.
Right. Half-assed restrictions for over a year are exhausting.
Yep.
Whereas whole-assed restrictions for 3 months, 4 months would have been onerous. But then perhaps
then
we'd
over.
Be back doing right. Although I guess we are seeing that even some places that did some pretty significant had pretty significant restrictions in place, things are just tough right now anyway.
Yes.
So.
But if we had been able to have some time period of things going back to
in the summer, right,
a semblance
right.
of normal, you
right,
know, you might have been able to then say, okay, this is something. For a couple of years, we're going to have to rhythmically do this, but just doing it continuously, it feels like it never goes away. So, baseball is thinking. In fact, just to recap, what sports did. Okay, so basketball basically shut down their season. Hockey shut down their season. Baseball started their season late. basketball eventually came back in a limited form, and they did it with a very, very successful bubble format, right? Mm-hmm. So they just had some teams. They all stayed at Disney World, and they had like no infections or virtually no infections from what I understand. Mm-hmm. And they were able to successfully play out the last part of the season and then the playoffs. I have to admit, I have no idea what hockey did.
Hockey, I think, just went away, right?
I think they did. I don't know if they finished. I'm not aware of them finishing. Baseball, and if they did finish.
I mean, hockey did do a playoffs, I think.
Okay.
And I think they, but I don't know that they did a bubble like the NBA did. But yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Yeah, see, now I feel like there was something where they did it, but they did it all in Canada.
Perhaps.
Maybe that's why, I don't know.
I paid less attention to hockey, in part because the Chicago Black Hockeys were tremendously bad. So
then baseball came back and had some early stumbles and then really pressed on teams to take it seriously. And it seems like then, for the most part, teams did take it seriously. And baseball went a pretty long time without any more outbreaks.
Yes, so, and baseball was also during a very advantageous time in the calendar.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But so it was an advantageous time in the calendar, but it seems like they were also pretty vigilant about taking care of things.
Absolutely.
Football, on the other hand, seemingly said, you know, we're the NFL. We're going to do what we do. Surely the virus will understand that nothing can get in the way of the NFL season.
Right.
The virus did not understand. It seems like football had a lot of issues. Yes. And as football tends to, and football tends to have a lot of issues with things like, you know, destroying the brains and bodies of the people playing, you know, gambling addiction, problems like that.
Yeah.
If we've got a lot of big football fans, I might be losing them now. I'm not a big football fan, if you hadn't already figured that out. But football did what it always does, which is it just keeps going right through the problems. And now they're getting close to the Super Bowl. So now baseball wants to do a full season. And they're saying they want to get fans in the stands again, and they want to. And I just wanted to talk with you about that, especially in light of the fact that last week, all of the cities in Arizona that host spring training facilities joined together in a letter asking the league to postpone spring training.
Right. This is in notoriously socialist Arizona.
Yes.
Right.
Well, they have famed socialists like Cindy McCain, Jeff Flake.
Right.
Doug Ducey.
So, and some of the cities like Mesa are significantly conservative. I mean, Phoenix is the suburbs around Phoenix are incredibly conservative. So that, to me, it really says something that these communities that benefit significantly from the income that they get from having a spring training,
yes,
are saying, we don't know that we're ready for that.
Well, and they'd probably be right, because from the first peak that happened, like at the first peak point in the late spring, early summer, they were seeing about 4,000 new cases a day at their top. They've been above that number for almost 3 months continuously now.
Right. And Arizona is a state also that still does not have any kind of mask guidance or, you know, they've kind of gone the approach of whatever, right? Mm-hmm. you know, virus cannot get in the way of my freedoms. But that just still makes it all the more, you know, they have every financial and political incentive to say, we're ready to go.
Yeah.
And they're not ready to go.
Right.
That must mean, to me, that means that it's in fact, there are significant concerns on their part, not just minor concerns. Like they are genuinely freaked out by the idea of people coming in. First of all, you know, 700, well, I guess 300 plus then the minor leaguers, you know, you're looking at probably 700-800 players or more, actually more than that probably, coming in. You're going to have all the staff, and you're going to have, because I don't know, was Major League Baseball saying that they wanted people to be able to attend, you know, spring training activities?
Yes. Yeah, there were teams that were, there are teams that have sent out information about tickets. They were going to do, of course, reduced seating. And of course, part of the complication is that I guess the hockey team in Arizona is having fans attend games.
Really?
Yeah. They're apparently doing like 25% capacity, but they're putting 25% capacity in a hockey arena. Which seems real dumb.
Yes. So there's significant cause for concern.
Yeah.
And they are recognizing that. And I don't know that Major League Baseball has acknowledged their concern at this point, right?
Well, I think that what I heard was the players' union is not open to delaying the start of the season. Because the players are saying they want to get in a full season, full pay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that, and players are, that for them, that's they're working off the financial incentive. I know baseball players are notoriously conservative as well.
Yes.
But I don't know that that's the politics coming into that. It's more the idea of they've watched the owners take any, you know, change in revenue as an opportunity to strip even more of the shared revenue away from the players.
Yeah.
And well, the players,
the ways that the owners have cried poor throughout all of this, some of which are just like financially impossible. I don't know anyone outside of owners who actually believe that they've done as badly as they're saying they've done.
Right.
So that which is how it's always been, right? The owners will always say that we don't make any money. You know, this is, we're doing this out of the goodness of our hearts. You know, and the fact that our investment, you know, grows exponentially, continuously.
Right. Right.
So it's, but I mean, and here's the amazing thing. Like Arizona said, please don't come. Florida, as far as I know, hasn't said anything. And Florida's coronavirus situation is still even worse than Arizona's.
Yeah, Florida is also, that's some really sketchy approach to the virus. I mean, that's that whole situation where it was pretty clear that Florida was scrubbing data and lying about in terms of their reporting.
Yeah.
Numbers of cases and deaths and things like that. And there's no evidence that that's even been cleared up.
Right.
Florida does not seem to care. Again, it's just people. We're making more all the time, apparently, right?
Apparently. Actually, apparently not. I haven't run this down, but apparently birth rates so far are down.
Yes.
So
right. So you could say you.
There was going to be a.
You talk problem. About you talk about America. You know, maybe being on its last legs.
Yeah.
And we look at like what happened in Europe. And in in Europe, after World War II, you know, birth rates have dropped significantly because Europeans have basically, in some ways, given up on their ability to remain civilized. they're concerned about the fact that, like, if we make more kids, we're probably just going to put them in a war anyway. So let's not make any more kids.
Yeah.
This is just ridiculous.
Yeah, apparently they're anticipating that the birth rate might be a 13% drop from 2019 in the year 2021. So yeah, we didn't actually – everyone stayed home, but we know what they weren't doing. So I guess this is the thing. I mean, like, the idea of bringing – and I'm assuming the reason that the only reason to bring those teams to town for spring training is if the teams bring their fans, right? I mean,
right.
The only way the cities are making money is the fan base and the tourism money, I think.
Right. So I think a lot of the cities have they gain revenue, right? But that's also from the fans. I think if they're making any money on rent on the stadiums or whatnot, that's already
right.
The teams are still on the hook for that.
Yeah.
Whether the fans come or not. But otherwise, yeah, it's the whether the cities directly get revenue from some of the ways in which, you know, whether it's concessions, percentages, or parking fees or whatever. But it's more so tax dollars.
Sure.
People staying in hotels, eating in restaurants, buying things, right?
Going to strip clubs. I'm assuming.
I guess. I don't, yeah.
I guess. Maybe that's just the players. I could be wrong. So yeah, it just feels like baseball. I mean, so it's pretty clear that 3 weeks from now, we won't be far enough along in the immunization process that it would be appropriate for the players to be immunized.
No.
Right.
No.
I haven't really heard any suggestions of players getting to jump the line on that. You know, like in the name of that, you know, they need to provide us an essential service with their entertainment.
No, and I know I don't remember which sports league it was, but there was a league that indicated, and this may have been baseball, that no, we're not jumping the line.
Right.
That they've already established that would be a bridge too far.
Yeah. Well, and you and I are Cubs fans, so we already know that our team is not going to be sufficiently entertaining to justify that essential. That's not fair. I love my Cubs. I'm frustrated with the management, so I love my Cubs, and they're probably going to be more interesting than the Pirates. So,
I don't know. Sometimes, you know, but the Pirates are going to get to see a lot of really interesting young players, maybe.
Yeah. I think the Pirates signed a couple of guys several years ago from the Indian subcontinent that are probably going to see time this year. So that's going to be new.
Yeah, I know at least one guy they had signed from the Indian subcontinent has since washed out.
Oh, they might bring him back.
How tough would it be to get cut from the Pirates system? No.
It's got to be discouraging. Even if you come from a land that has no baseball historical culture, you've got to know that's a blow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I just, it really feels to me like it feels irresponsible.
It does.
And that they ought to say, again, back up spring training, back, you could do all kinds of things. You could push the season later. You could, and I mean, they already did these playoff bubbles last year, which I don't know that anyone loved it, but it, you know, it was workable. There are all kinds of ways they could do this that could support the idea of saying, we're not going to start pulling people together in mass until where we've let more people get immunizations, and until the weather has started to improve.
Yeah. I think you could push back spring training a bit, not have other people at spring training. Mm-hmm. So you essentially create bubbles within each complex.
Yeah.
And start the season a little later without fans. Mm-hmm. You can you know, mitigate the fact that you're starting your season later by doing more things like doubleheaders.
Yeah.
And maybe
these 7-inning doubleheader games last year, and I actually didn't hate that as much as I hated all the other changes they made.
Yeah, I mean, you know, things have to change over time.
Yeah.
Society changes, interests change. You have to change with them. And in that regard, I don't necessarily push back hard on any of the changes they made.
Yeah.
Some will last, some won't. Apparently the DH is not going to be enforced in the NL this year.
Well, apparently they still haven't decided. They're still saying, I don't know.
I thought the last I heard was that, but well, I believe they're still saying, I don't know, but I don't know how you can get away with that at this late date. I would think that the National League teams would be like, well, let's make a decision.
Yeah. But apparently they also haven't decided on if they're going to do the extra inning change. Like, apparently all of these rules are still, like, undecided.
Well, you know, it's been busy. There's
yeah.
Had a lot to do. So, but changes are natural. Baseball is a sport that has resisted change in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, as a sport that had a lot of change in its early history.
Yeah.
And by early history, you're even looking at, you know, up to the 30s, 40s. Mm-hmm. You know, teams changed names, teams changed cities, rules were modified.
Yep.
All sorts of things changed. And we then fell into the static period for like the last 85, 90 years. Well, you know, if you got to make some changes to accommodate where society is at now, then you do that. In any event, if you're making a change like 7-inning doubleheaders, and that allows you to compress your schedule a little bit and still get some off days for the players.
Yep.
Or if you do things like where you expand rosters in certain ways, all of those things can help to work through this situation that we're looking at. And if you can do that successfully, keep the sport moving forward. So at least by having baseball being played, even if fans aren't in the seats, you're still generating interest.
Yep.
And from that point, maybe you look at the All-Star break as a time when conceivably you could perhaps start putting fans in seats.
Right.
Like by that point, in terms of, you know, vaccination numbers, there should be a decent number of people having had an opportunity to be vaccinated by that point. You're in the summer, which is an advantageous time.
Right.
The idea that owners are going to say, if we don't have fans in the seats, we can't afford to do this. Owners are lying.
Right.
Particularly the owners of the larger, you know, the legacy clubs.
Yep.
If Tom Ricketts lost any money last year, I don't think it was much. And, well, he's made a lot every other year.
Right. And if he lost, and again, if he lost money with that team in particular, a lot of it is going to be chalked up to the fact that he made real estate investments all over the place that, like, leveraging on the team itself.
Right. He's already tried to play it off that way, that, you know, the team has spent X amount of dollars and such on capital improvements and whatnot. I don't consider a hotel a capital improvement of the Chicago Cubs.
No.
I don't even consider an office building that the Cubs occupy to be a capital improvement of the Chicago Cubs.
Right. Beside the fact that that, I mean, again, missing the point, every time you make a capital improvement like that, now you have property that has enduring value. And right. even if you don't pull any revenue from that right now, your worst case scenario is in the future you will pull revenue from it, and it has a value for sale at some point in the future.
Right.
So, yeah, that nonsense has hopefully it's not fooling many or anyone. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that if baseball would back things up a little bit, again, think creatively about a more realistic timeline for putting fans in the stadiums, take advantage of things like doubleheaders. I think that they could have a really successful comeback season. If they do it this way, though, I'm really worried that you're going to see, seeing as they want to run spring training in two locations that where the virus is not well controlled at this point. Mm-hmm. I think things could go bad, and if it starts bad, you may just create a problem you can't unwind eventually.
Right. I'm not as much worried about if like there's high infection rates among players and such that fans won't care about to watch. It's that you don't have the product on the field.
Right. Oh yeah, no, I agree. That's what I'm concerned
about. I figured that's what you were saying, but it's not so much a perception issue. It's all about you're then putting an inferior product on the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're putting people's lives at risk. You're again right. potentially putting because again, and we're not going to dive too deep into all this, but it's still unclear what kind of long-term effects there are. There are still plenty of cases that we hear about of young people who are generally healthy, who are enduring ongoing effects mm-hmm. from infection. Mm-hmm. So this is still largely an unknown. And just treating it really casually, just because we have been for so long at this point, is as stupid as it's ever been.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to watch baseball.
Yeah,
I'd
also love to come and see my parents and let my kids hug their grandparents and their great grandmother. You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff right. I'd love right now, and I'm gonna wait until it's all safe and smart.
There's just a real confusion about what a want is. Versus what a need is or an inalienable right is. Mm-hmm. And what short-term sacrifice actually is. I think a lot of people look at short-term sacrifice and suddenly it's like, oh, I can't do that. It's a small sacrifice or even a large sacrifice for a fixed period of time. What will ultimately be hopefully a fixed period of time.
Yeah.
So that you can get back to whatever else it is that you have been accustomed to.
That's right.
Sacrifice is not something that Americans know how to do much anymore.
No. No. But it does strike me
that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're very impressed with our level of sacrifice, whether we're doing any or not. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's interesting because this is going to be the next, there's still going to be more of these sorts of stories and sort of public decisions to play out in other fields, in other kinds of entertainments and in schools and in workplaces and in a lot of public arenas. It's just interesting to me. Baseball is the next one. And right now they're acting like they didn't learn any lessons from the last year.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about people who are really struggling, talk about, actors, not film actors or TV actors, but stage actors.
Yeah.
Musicians. Mm-hmm. Not Taylor Swift, but all the other ones, besides that handful of people.
Touring to live, Yeah.
Right. And the venues, mm-hmm. you know. And again,
not to skip those people, the vendors for ballparks and you know, all the people that the whole ecosystem of people that are around live sports and things like that. Those are the people that, I mean, make the decisions. Let's do what we've got to do to deal with the painful stretch, but make it as fast as possible. Instead mm-hmm. of stretching it out with half measures, because the people who can't, like the people who are most vulnerable are the people who will suffer the most from half measures making things take twice as long.
Well, they already have.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Right, and we've done almost nothing to help people who are in the most vulnerable situations. You know, from a financial standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, the wealthiest among us have gained, you know, almost $4 trillion in wealth.
Mm-hmm.
The money is there.
Yeah.
Because clearly there are some people that have benefited from there having been a pandemic.
A worldwide pandemic. Yeah.
Right. I'm inclined to say that I don't want to say no one should benefit from a pandemic, but no one should benefit to a exorbitant degree. That seems like profiteering to me.
Yeah.
I mean, if people who already made, you know, PPE are now doing gangbusters business, well, that's, I'm not going to necessarily call them profit. You know, if they're not
right.
price gouging now, well, that's just the way it is.
Yep.
You know, you know, there's lots of, you know, everywhere you go now, there's more signs and everything that people are printing up talking about whether or not they're still doing takeout, or, you know, signs on the floor at the grocery store or whatever. So somebody is seeing some business because of that. Yep. Now, they've probably also lost other business. But in the end, the fact that some people have lined their pockets well past what anyone ever needs, when they already had well past what anyone ever needed,
right,
is a problem. It's an actual problem. You don't even have to say that you're against people being rich to think that that's a problem.
Right.
Because there are lots of people who, I mean, you could, yeah.
Yeah.
No, some people think this is getting political. But it's not. This is not political. Politics shouldn't, you know, there shouldn't be a line in politics where we say my politics have a place for people to starve, for people to lose their homes or to live on the streets or have to sell off all of their assets just to get by,
right,
while other people who have assets to spare get more. There shouldn't be a, if your politics have space for that, then your politics are an issue.
Right.
Because your politics don't have space for humanity in them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would argue that if you think that looking at the conversation this way makes it a political conversation, then what you're really doing is you're projecting that for you there's a political value here. Because to me, I would agree with you, it's not a political issue because it's not there should not be any side. There shouldn't be like a spectrum of ways that we're comfortable with how this has gone.
Right.
And you can be on this side or that. No, that it's, this is not okay. And that's not politics. That's community. That's saying as the community that and the larger community that we're a part of, it can't be okay that these kind of disparities are happening.
Right. Yeah. And many of these disparities are happening. Even as, you know, you have certain ideas that some people are poor because of their behaviors. I think that's a load of hokum,
mm-hmm.
generally speaking. But many of the people, most of the people suffering now, has nothing to do with their unwillingness to work. It's more about the fact that there is not work for many of these people.
Right.
Or there's people that are still working as hard, but they're not making as much money even.
Right.
And there's people that want to work where there aren't jobs out there. Mm-hmm. Or else you're asking people to take jobs that won't pay them enough to get by, that put them in situations of health risk.
Right.
And that's not an equation that we should be making people choose.
No.
So, well, this has really gone a bit far afield from spring training, but this, I still think it's all connected. But
I think
it's
putting spring training in context. I mean, that's the thing. This is because I agree with you. I mean, I think if you have spring training now, and if teams try to force fans, and I don't mean force fans, but I mean force an opportunity for fans to be there, then that means you're going to put a bunch of people around each other in conditions that are probably not safe enough for that yet. You're going to have a whole ecosystem of people who didn't really make their living last year because there wasn't a real spring training last year. And you're going to put them into the forced position of working to have a spring training this year, putting themselves at risk and putting the rest of their community at risk. So all we're doing is talking about that. I mean, you take the question baseball is facing and you blow it out to the rest of our culture. It's the same questions. It's just we were zooming in on one segment of why we need some wise and consistent approaches to how we're going to finish getting through this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break for a minute.
Okay.
All right. Right, I like back. It. So while we were gone, Kevin was looking something up. I'm going to let him share what he's been looking up here.
Right. So somehow we got on the subject of there's a YA book, I think called Hatchet, in which the main character and his hatchet are in a plane and the pilot dies and he's farting up a storm. That's one of the signs, right? The main character talks about the fact that it smells so bad in the airplane. So we were looking up whether or not actually intense farting is a sign of a heart attack.
I insist that it's not, and I'm a Red Cross certified trainer, and you looked it up, and you're not finding any support for that, huh?
Not really, no. I Googled farting heart attack. Maybe that's not the right Boolean search to do. But farting heart attack – and of course, you also get the people also ask section.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some of the common ones like, does heart attack give you gas? Does your body warn you before a heart attack? What is excessive gas a sign of? And then there's, is it normal to fart 50 times a day? Which links to an article called Why Do I Keep Farting? What It Means and How to Stop It. Until you got to the how to stop it, that sounds like a kid's book. Why do I keep farting? And it's like a bear and a rabbit.
Yeah.
And the bear is just smoking out the rabbit. And it's... I don't know. Bear... Why do you keep farting?
By the way, here's how sensitive Google search must be. Because as you're talking, I searched, is farting a heart attack sign? And I looked through all the
did it bring me up?
Links that it gave me. And at the end, here's what it says. Search is related to, is farting a heart attack sign? The first one it lists is farting heart attack.
Dang.
Which is what you just told me you searched.
Yeah.
So clearly Google's like, hey, somebody else was just looking for this, bro.
That old game that we all used to play, Farting Heart Attack, would be a pretty good name for at least an album.
Yeah.
If not a whole band. Kind of like in the Dead Milkmen sort of vein, right?
I agree.
Farting Heart Attack might be an album by anyway, so
That could be a heart attack or a heart attack. That could be an album title for my new band that I was telling you about earlier this week. Televangelist Bouffant.
Yes, it could be.
All right,
it could be. Excessive farting, also called flatulence, can make you feel uncomfortable and self-conscious.
Oh, I didn't know you looked up hoity-toity Google.
Show of hands if you ever farted in class in high school.
I like that it says flatulence could make you feel self-conscious. Here's a news flash.
It might also be a sign of a heart problem. Whoa. Whoa.
What?
You have excessive flatulence if you fart more than 20 times a day.
Really?
You're like, uh-oh.
I guess I'll be counting this weekend.
What causes a smelly fart? Well, it's air poop. I mean, it's, let's be honest here. I mean, come on.
It's a near miss.
It's air, whoosh, like if you like if you had like a like a like rose water and you
yeah
and you ran a breeze over it, you smell that, right? You have a turd in your.
If I walked into a room and, that was filled with lilac bushes, the room would smell like lilac, right?
Right.
If I come out of a room, also known as my colon.
You know, that's – you don't hear realtors often refer to rooms as colons. They usually call that a powder room.
This is what we call the colon of this house. Oh, I don't want to spend much time here at all.
It says 2.5 colons in this house. Is it bad if you fart a lot? That just seems more an opinion than
it does.
But then it at does. The very bottom, well, then there's some questions that are just stupid. Why do you fart more as you get older? Or
I think it's because you're not trying as hard to impress people.
Or why do we fart before we poop? Well, come on. You can't figure that one out.
I'm going to say, though, that the question where it says that flatulence might make you feel self-conscious, I'm just going to go out and say, if flatulence doesn't make you feel self-conscious, that might be a sign of a problem.
Well, like if you're in a room of middle school boys,
uh-huh.
Boom, you're not going to feel self-conscious.
Oh, no, that's a status update.
Right. Then – Here, there's more questions I have now that I didn't have before. Why do I fart every 2 minutes? Well, we need to look up there because that equals more than 50 times.
Unless you only have a 40-minute day.
That's buddy, every 2 minutes. Okay, I want to see what the answer to that is. It goes back to that.
Now, my follow-up question to that is, do you mean exactly every 2 minutes?
And
is your body marking time this way?
And mark. And mark. Yeah,
that would be amazing.
I've been clocking it for 3 weeks, and every 2 minutes. All right, so then you have, why does my wife fart a lot? I've always loved the questions that are very specific that people type into Google. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Why do old ladies fart so
like
much?
Like when they put my wife and then put comma and they put her name. That's like.
Why does Jenny fart so much? So why do old ladies fart so much? It's because they have less of the lactase enzyme that helps digest the carbohydrate lactose. Right.
Well, any old ladies that are listening to the podcast. You know what? We're not judging.
Why do I fart in my sleep? I don't know. Do girls fart more than boys? Is it possible to never fart? This isn't actually possible, is the answer.
Wow.
So how many calories do you lose when you fart?
Okay. Okay.
Why am I so gassy all of a sudden? Like, there's a really specific question, right?
Well, Jim.
Do you... Yesterday, maybe two meatball sandwiches was too much.
Frank.
Do you fart in surgery? Sometimes, I...
Are we talking about patients or surgeons?
Great question. Why do I fart so much during my period? So you have that question, and I'm going to skip one. And then you go to, can you breathe out a fart? What? Hold on. How fast does a fart travel miles per hour?
Do we have any?
Do you fart during a colonoscopy? But in the middle of all that was the question, should you sleep with socks on?
What does that have to do with farting? Maybe this person doesn't understand where the farts are leaving their body from.
Can you breathe out a fart?
That's right. Those two are joined together. One person who thinks you breathe out your farts, and the other one who thinks they come out the bottom of your feet.
Oh, my God. There's an actual answer to how fast does a fart travel in miles per hour.
I would hope so. I would assume someone has done doctoral work on this.
It says 6.8 miles per hour. I think that probably varies.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely had farts that felt like they didn't travel away from me fast enough.
Okay, so I keep getting more and more questions. That is a burp a fart out of your mouth? Sweet.
By the way, do you remember that when he was very young, my eldest son, who does not listen to the podcast, so he will not know that I'm embarrassing him in this way, my eldest son used to refer to farting as burping in his pants. Do you remember that?
I think I don't remember that because it may have been overwritten by the fact that my children did similar things like that.
Yeah.
Or they would call burping a mouth fart.
Oof. See, I think burping my pants sounds less gross than mouth fart.
It absolutely does. Oof. Can you get pink eye from a fart?
I believe the answer is yes.
I mean, how close are you getting?
I mean, the real answer is not if you're living right.
Why does my breath smell like poop? Are you a dog? Did you eat poop? So, yeah. Well, this kind of ties back into the fact that it was actually determined that the aerosols, the droplets, the spray – let's try not spray so much. If you're lucky, that comes from a fart, can transmit the coronavirus.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Wow.
So, if you find yourself out in public and someone does not have pants on and they're aiming their butt at people.
Right. Tell them to put a mask on.
Put a mask on that. That's what underpants are, right?
Really, underpants are the mask of the privates. Yeah.
So this is not exactly the direction.
The pants are like the N95 mask of the privates.
Okay. Farts can fight strokes, heart attacks, and dementia. What?
So what about men wearing kilts?
They're smellier.
And they're more. I'm going to apologize in advance for this one. They're more likely to be super spreaders.
That is. Indeed, they are. So apparently, smelling farts can fight strokes, heart attacks, and dementia.
Ooh.
Hydrogen sulfide is toxic in large doses, but in tiny amounts, it helps protect cells and fight illness, according to researchers at an actual university.
At an actual university. So in other words, in, next time I'm in the living room and
in the UK, yeah. Tell your wife.
And I fart, I should say to my wife, you're welcome.
Yes.
I'm looking just helping you fight off dementia, honey.
This was Exeter University. You know, they deserve the shame. So, yeah.
They do.
So we were going to talk a little bit about, speaking of, smelly
stink. So we were going to close with, yes, we were going to close with a little bit of conversation about the Cubs. And so if you're really not interested in the Cubs, then bye. If, on the other hand,
if you're not interested in talking about farts, sorry. Should have given you a warning.
If you stuck around for 15 minutes of fart talk and you're leaving for the Cubs conversation now, that's on you. So
hopefully not.
Oh. Ooh. Well said. So this is I want to talk about this today because the Cubs have just signed a new left fielder, it would appear. His name is Jock Peterson. Jock Russell Peterson. Jock
J-O-C.
J-O-C. It's his full first name.
Not the Jock. Not the long-winded version of Jock J-O-C-K.
No.
Be more concise.
That you may know from Jock Jams.
From Jock Jams or giving you wedgies in gym class or
or Jock Itch.
Or the itch. So yeah, so Jocular Russell Peterson.
Yes. So the Cubs have signed him apparently for $7 million, and they he will be replacing Kyle Schwarber. Now, when the Cubs let Kyle Schwarber go, the general like thought process behind this was, first of all, they felt like they needed to save money, and they expected Schwarber to cost like $10 to $12 million. But then also there was this secondary theme that they were trying to change the mix of their talent, that they've got a lot of hitters who draw walks and hit for power but have too much swing and miss, too many strikeouts, low batting average, poor situational hitting, right? So the thought was they're going to let Schwarber go and replace him with somebody who corrects some of those deficits to give some more balance to the team, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here's the amazing thing. Well, as soon as I heard this morning that Jock Peterson was who they signed, my first thought was, isn't he basically the same thing? That was my instinct. So I went and looked it up. So Jock Peterson, how insane, how many circles of this hell do you want me to go down? Or do you want me to like take the express trip?
Take the express trip at this point.
I'll take the express trip. If you go to Baseball Reference, if you go to Baseball Reference, and at the bottom of every player's page, there is a little thing called similarity scores. This is something that came out of I think this is one of Bill James's ideas. And basically what it is it's a program where you take several key statistics and you take any two players and you compare what their career total is. And then there's a value assigned to the difference between those two, right? And so you're starting from a point of two things that are exactly equal would have a total of 1,000. But then for all differences, you're subtracting from there, okay? So 1,000 is your baseline, and the closer you are to 1,000, the more similar. So when you go to Jock Peterson's page on Baseball Reference, The most similar batter to Jock Peterson for their whole for his whole career is Kyle Schwarber. Now, this is I'm not saying the most similar batter playing right now. I'm saying in all of baseball history, out of the tens of thousands of players that there have been, the player whose career looks the most like Jock Peterson's is Kyle Schwarber. Now, Jock Peterson is 1 year older than Kyle Schwarber. So when you go to Kyle Schwarber's page, Jock Peterson is only his second most similar batter. But if you look through age 27, which is how old Kyle Schwarber was this last season, and you say, like, there's another way of doing it. You take every player and you say, okay, for all their accumulated stats through age 27, you just use those stats to get this similarity score. Well, if you stop at Jock Peterson's age 27 and you count Kyle Schwarber's age 27, now they are, again, each other's most similar player. So they're almost exactly the same guy. They're both lefties who hit for low batting average. They draw a lot of walks, and they hit for power.
And they struggle against lefties.
And they both struggle against lefties. And if anything, Jock Peterson struggles more against lefties. Again, Peterson is 1 year older. They're both similar defensively. They're the same guy. It doesn't the only way it makes sense is that they thought Kyle Schwarber was going to cost them $10 to $12 million, and Jock Peterson's going to cost them $7 million. I had told you earlier in the offseason when they decided to cut Schwarber or not offer him a contract, I said, you know, if they're going to go and really change it up, the guy I'd love to see them go get is the guy who had been playing left field for the Twins named Eddie Rosario. So Eddie Rosario hits for a little less power than Schwarber and Peterson. He's more of a doubles guy than a homers guy. But he has a higher batting average. His lefty-righty split is almost entirely in his power. Like, his career batting average is .277 against righties and lefties. His career on-base percentage between against righties is only 8 higher than his career on-base percentage against lefties. It's 100 less points of slugging. So against lefties, he's mostly a singles hitter. Against righties, he hits doubles, okay? But if they wanted to get and that guy was still available and now today has signed with the Cleveland Indians for $8 million. So to me, it is really, really baffling that you would let go of a guy and let the message out there be, we need to look different as a team, and then replace that guy with literally – the most similar player in the history of Major League Baseball. Like, everything. I really cannot figure this out. Again, if it's literally just about saving $5 million, because that's what it suggests. It suggests that they actually wanted a guy like Kyle Schwarber. They just didn't want to pay as much for him.
Yeah.
And that's how maddening it is to be a Cub fan at this point.
Well, but, you know, we've also talked about you done differently. This is not necessarily a problem. We talked about the fact that you start to have – you have players. What you're hoping is you have a system that is developing people to take the place of serviceable but perhaps overall underwhelming existing players.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's probably one way to describe Kyle Schwarber, right? So you could say, well, you know what? He's going to be too expensive. Get rid of him. Replace him with somebody. Unfortunately, we had to replace him with somebody that we had to go out and get. But the goal of doing that would still be to save money, right?
Right.
And they did save money here.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, again, like, it's hard because whereas Kyle Schwarber was – gave you a weak bat against lefties, Jock Peterson is like a hole. Jock, against lefties, Jock Peterson is like another pitcher.
And well, so here's what you're going to do. Jock Peterson will play left field against righties.
Except the reports today are that the reason that he went with the Cubs as opposed to some other options is that the Cubs told him that he could play every day.
Well, you'll play almost every day.
I mean, apparently that was he was upset that he was a platoon player in L.A., and he didn't want to be a platoon player somewhere else. Jock, there's a reason you're a platoon player.
Yeah, because I was going to say that against lefties then, assuming we haven't traded him by then, Chris Bryant could play left field, mm-hmm. and David Bodie could play third base. Not that David Bodie is the equivalent of Chris Bryant, but overall you're still getting more out of your lineup with that configuration.
Right.
Right?
Yep. But again, if you signed Eddie Rosario, what you all you would be giving up on your left-hander days is power. Some doubles.
Right. What Eddie Rosario would have done is actually given you some of that different look in your lineup.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. He
wanted. And maybe he just wasn't.
Because again, also, like these are two guys, Schwarber and Peterson are both guys that strike out 25-27% of the time. Eddie Rosario strikes out 19% of the time, which doesn't sound like a massive difference, but it's like 50 strikeouts a year. So what he would have given you is he puts the ball in play 50 more times a year, turns some number of those into hits because he gets a higher batting average, and you lose some power, but you gain consistency no matter what side of the plate or, you know, what side – the pitcher's coming from. Anyway,
yeah.
this is what I'm saying. I feel like, I guess I'm going to say it now. I feel like we're about to enter into another fallow period of Cub fandom.
Yes.
Yeah. We have been at the mountaintop. I think we're coming down the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think you're probably right. Some of that could change if some of their mid to high system talent pans out in the next year or so. Yeah. Particularly if they get pitching. If some pitchers actually become serviceable members of the rotation, then there's a lot more money available, assuming the Ricketts have any money left, to fill other spots.
Yeah.
Now we know that I'm sure Tom Ricketts living on the streets right now.
Yeah, it's a rough life.
Driving like an old, Oldsmobile Omega.
Driving?
Around.
Oh. Well, Tom's probably driving. Todd's riding.
He has to drive now, yeah. So it's, yeah. Anyway.
All right. Well, with that, I think we ought to, we moved on to a different topic and ended up in a depressing place there as well. So that was well done on our part. That's the podcast you need for January.
Well, I think the conversation about farts led in nicely.
Yeah, it did.
As you may have alluded to already. So, yeah.
All right.
I think in a lot of ways this conversation was about farts.
It was about things that stink. That was the theme. That might, in fact, might be the title of the podcast this week.
Things that stink?
Things that stink. All right. So you should check us out at our Facebook page, which is Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. Occasionally we put stupid things up there. If you want to tell us anything, like, you want to put a note that just says, "You guys are an embarrassment to society," or "You have wasted my time for the last time. Love, Mom." You can put that there, or you can find us on Instagram and you can respond to our occasional Instagram posts that way.
Very occasional, unfortunately.
We really need to work on getting ourselves up to influencer level on Instagram.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But and then
we need to get ourselves on TikTok.
Yeah, that too.
You ready for TikTok? TikTok.
I am ready. Super ready.
TikTok.
And if instead, as an act of continuing defiance against Louis DeJoy, you want to reach out to us through the mail, you can send to, in honor of Hank Aaron, Ogunquit, Maine has given us P.O. Box 44 at this point. So P.O. Box 44, Ogunquit, Maine. And if you don't know how to spell Ogunquit, as they say in New England, you must not be from around here. And the zip code is 03907.
I really hope to find I hope to never find out that someone has actually sent something to one of these addresses.
How are you going to feel if that happens?
I will feel horrible. Because I love mail.
I love mail too. So if you really want to send us real mail, don't send it to Ogunquit, because if you hadn't figured it out by now, folks, that's a bit.
This is a bit we do.
It's been a bit the whole time.
But I've got it. I enjoy the bit, so we'll continue doing the bit.
We're not done with it, but it's been a bit.
But I got something in the works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you got a bit, double down. That's what you got to do. All right.
All right.
So, good talking to you.
Yeah, likewise.
Until next time, everybody, bye-bye.
All right. Love you. Bye-bye.